you know, folks, I'm getting some.
How about those friggin' pirates?
Yes, I am a pirate.
You have to go with the pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
It is a first down. Pirate.
Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. Or you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it!
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
You will get them all. I can promise you that.
Painted purple all night long in Eastern North Carolina!
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
All right, welcome in to the Sunday night edition of the Sports Objective, TSO Sunday. Let's bring in ladies and gentlemen all the way from the great town of LaGrange. It's Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, sir?
What's going on, Dave? Camp starts this week. Hard to believe. July 31st. Seems a little early. Most of the time it seems like they start around the 5th or 6th of August. But anyways, camp starts this week, so Pirate football about to gear up.
Let's bring in a guy that's had a nice little hiatus. I think he's well-rested now, all the way from the Commonwealth of Connecticut, our great friend Matt Semenza. Welcome back, man. Glad to have you back.
What's up, fellas?
You guys, definitely, like I said, getting the feeling of football, you know, in the air. I spent probably a good hour today reading through Phil Steele's magazine, kind of prepping for the upcoming season. So definitely starting to get that feel for college football.
No doubt, guys. In fact, we'll talk media day. We found out this afternoon, guys, it's Monday, August. It's a Monday, not a Saturday, August the 19th at 10 o'clock at Talmadge Tower. But we're going to spend a lot of time on the show today breaking down the depth chart and our expert, our football insider. He played for the Pirates, linebacker in the 1990s under Coach Logan, and that's Matt Semenza. We'll have that. Guys, a couple roundtable notes really quick before we dive into that real quick. Did you guys hear about, Matt, you talked about it in our group chat on Friday, but it looks like what we've been talking about for a long time, that separation from the power schools, if you will, and the group of five and everybody else, looks like that took place or is starting to take place on Friday as they're moving 85 scholarships to 105 scholarships. Just want to get y'all's take on that.
I did not realize that's happened. So we're going to 105 scholarships.
Yep. And get this. This is the here's one that's a really big advantage for us. I think that's going to be tough, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Guys, get this. Dan Wetzel's podcast was listened to this evening right before our show. Baseball, as you know, that I hate this stupid 11.7 scholarships. Guys, they're going up to 34 scholarships. So we can basically, what they're doing is they're putting a cap on the number of guys you can have. So it'll be a 34 total scholarship. So
is all this a done deal or proposed?
Well, they turned everything in on Friday, a 100-page document.
It's official. It's official, guys.
Yeah.
From what I've read. Huge news.
Yeah, we love our retiring coach, Kurt Kraft. He's retiring after 19 years. Guys, they're going to say that you, let me back up. It's not mandatory, okay? But if you do opt in to this level, 34 cross-country scholarships. And here's another thing. It's 17 for the men, 17 for the women. And, Matt, we were talking about cutting sports, but here's another thing.
Yeah, this is going to start the separation. I mean, I don't see how most so-called group of five schools, particularly in the NIL era, are going to be able to compete. I don't know that going from 85 to 105 in football is that big of a deal, but the other sports, what I think going from 85 to 105 is probably going to do, Matt, see if you agree, Dave, also, is a lot of these high school athletes aren't being recruited as much. I think this gets more high school players back into, you know, into the FBS level, because a lot of those guys are going to FCS now and then trying to play their way up because of the portal. But I think other sports is where it's really, like baseball, 34 scholarships, good God.
Well, you don't have to. Here's the thing. There, it's not, thankfully, it's not mandatory.
Well, you're not going to be able to compete, Dave. If you don't do it, you're not going to be able to compete.
Well, we're going to have to, Matt, what I was going to add is one of the ways they're going to, like, compete, if you will, with Title One, what they're going to do is they're
– Title Nine, you mean?
I mean, why did I say Title One? Sorry, Title Nine. Sorry. Thank you, Kyle. What they're going to do is they're going to have three layers, three tiers, if you will, in the athletic program. So at East Carolina, it's going to be men's basketball and football tier one. Tier two, you may have like baseball, women's basketball, handful there. And then tier three would be – so in other words, you're going to basically do what you're already doing because you're putting a priority on football now, being we're a football school, and men's basketball. But what do you guys think about that? So in other words, scholarships and other things and staffing and everything could go to the top tier, and then you're just going to basically have just the bottom of the basics for the
Olympics. Yeah, whatever's left over, right?
I think that's fair, and it's a way that we won't get sued. I agree with you, Matt, when I was thinking about that on the afternoon. If I love football, and football is the number one sport at our school. And I really, truly believe, guys, that not to get in on a debate here about fundraising, we could talk hours about that, but we want to talk.
Yeah,
about,
let's don't.
No, we're not. But just wanted to say that we're going to have to step it up when it comes to fundraising. Even if we cut sports, we're still going to have to compete at a high level with those tier one, if you will, sports for our athletic program.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, this just – the NCAA continues to stick it to everyone outside the Power Five. And, you know, like I've said for years, the NCAA guys, as you know, the worst-run organization in America. And they just have lost all control, and they've given all control to the SEC and the Big Ten. And, you know, just to kind of start off on the – on the increase in scholarships for football up to 105. I mean, that's a huge factor. And, you know, to kind of break it down, I think in the simplest terms, what you're going to see the bigger schools, the LSUs, the Alabamas, gobble up those scholarships quick and take away scholarships from, you know, the so-called G5. But
kids
what's
going to
happen,
Matt,
is sort of a secondary result from that is you're going to see after a year or two when all those guys, they realize they're not going to play, guess what? You're going to see the portal is going to be busier than ever, which is hard to imagine. It's even busier than now. And at that point, schools, I think like East Carolina, you're going to see us recruiting more and more from the portal, because those guys who go to Alabama, guess what? You know, you're going to have 2 5-stars in front of you. Good luck getting playing time.
Right.
You're going to hit the portal, and now the East Carolinas, you know, the Tulanes, you know, they're going to gobble those guys up. So I just think it's going to have huge ramifications, and I think it's just going to make us have to recruit from the portal even more.
Hey, what I think is going to become all this, particularly with affecting all sports, I really go back to, I think there's going to be a split. I really believe this is all leading to a split where you're going to have two levels, potentially three levels of Division One, or whatever the hell you want to call it. But I think the Power Five schools and the Group of Five, and maybe some potential lower-level Power Five, I just think there's going to be a split. I think a split's coming. Do you agree, Matt?
Hey, I was going to tell you guys this real quick. Kyle, you were and they're going to think we're picking on them because they're a rival school. But get on the podcast tonight, something Kyle's been talking about for a long time. It's not going to hurt the East Carolinas of the world as far as what we talked about. We'll end up initially it hurts as far as scholarships and everything. But Kyle's been talking about this for at least 2 years or more. The teams that it's going to hurt is the lower level Power Five teams. And they mention, wait for it, NC State. So, Kyle, you're way ahead of everybody on that. So I want to give you credit. But I thought that was funny. It's going to hurt those teams that are – they're on this, on the other side of the bubble, and we're on this side of the bubble. were like just close, just not quite there, if you will, for Power Five, and they're barely on the other side, and they can argue with me all day long. But guys, I'm looking at Matt. I wanted to ask you. I know you're a Big Ten guy. I'm looking at the Big Ten and SEC. Those two conferences are about. There's not that many teams that can compete at the level they're talking about and being more and more separation. Even when it comes to, even if you want to argue halves, I think there is an even bigger split that's going to happen with the halves, the quote unquote power teams versus the group of five teams. You look at NC State, they can't compete if Alabama has 105 scholarships. A lot of these guys, Dave Doran and company, Mac Brown and all those guys at NC State and Carolina, they can't compete. Even with Carolina having a lot of money, they can't compete with Alabama when it comes to football.
Yeah, I think both of you guys are right. I think there's definitely a split coming. It's happening. It's happening right in front of us now between NIL and now with this scholarship limit. And that split is definitely coming. Unfortunately, yeah. I hate it. I really do. So certainly, like, huge news there. I mean, how do you compete when you look at – just think about it like this. If you're in the Big Ten, your new TV deal is roughly $80 million per year per school. What we're getting at East Carolina, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, $7 million per year?
$7-8 million, yeah.
How do you realistically, how are you able to compete with that? That is just the gap is now widening to a point where it's scary. It's getting to the point where it's just downright scary if you're outside of the good old boys club, as I like to refer to it.
Yeah, it's the Big Ten, SEC, and then after that you got the Big 12, which is the next step, and then the ACC's down below that. I think the ACC's getting around $30 million a year. I think the Big 12 was 40 to 50 million a year. SEC, Big Ten, I think are comparable, both 60 to 80 million a year, something like that. Something ridiculous.
Yeah, so, they're even talking about the next contract, Kyle, coming up. They're talking about they could get 90 to 100 million.
SEC,
yeah, and Big Ten.
Well, I think the Big Ten just signed their contract, but yeah, I mean, the Big Ten's got so many big media markets. So you know, while the SEC gets a lot of eyeballs, so does the Big Ten. The Big Ten, you know, you got so many big media markets. You got LA. You got, UCLA is in LA, if anybody didn't know that. and then you got the New York market, supposedly, with Rutgers. Plus, you know, a lot of other markets. We won't go into.
Hey, we have New York, too. We have Army.
Technically speaking.
Well, I love that joke about UCLA, by the way. I mean, the Deshaun Foster Media Day press conference was an absolute disaster. I'm still kind of speechless, guys, when I look back at that, unbelievable.
Yeah, he was definitely not ready for prime time when it comes to winning the media day. I felt sorry for the guy. It looked like he was a deer in headlights. Like it was.
I didn't feel sorry for him. I mean, he took a job as a Division I FBS head coach.
No, I know that.
He knew media day was coming. He's making a shitload of money. I don't feel sorry for him at all. He's in over his head, at least it appears to be. We'll see on the football field. Maybe they're a good football team, but. I got a feeling, without looking at his staff, they're going to be the drizzling third.
Yeah, it definitely could happen. By the way, Matt, a sidebar really fast, and we'll talk football. Your thoughts on TNT, Turner's losing the NBA. So all those guys we've watched for years in the pregame, halftime, and postgame shows.
I heard they may still get their tier three games. Is that not going to happen now?
They didn't. Well, they were supposed to, but then I read the last couple of days that apparently Amazon, they didn't meet the.
I heard they matched their bid for the tier three games, but did the NBA decide to go with Amazon anyway?
Yeah, that's what I read a couple of days ago. So there's only one more year of TNT. Which they've had the NBA for 100 years. I mean, for not 100, but a long, long time. During all the Jordan years and all that, 30. It's probably 30 or 40 years. 87, 88. We were in high school, right, Matt? Somewhere along in there that TNT's had NBA. So just speaking of TV contracts, I had to throw that in because my son and myself were big on the NBA. I know that Kyle, I love you. I know it's not your favorite, but Matt with the Knicks now doing better. I know you'd probably like to see him on TNT even more.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that because to me, like one of the best sports shows on television is when you have Barkley and Shaq.
Yeah,
you know, when they're just Kenny like kind of clowning around and they're yeah. Kenny Smith and Ernie. You know, I really enjoy that show. Like they're just down to earth guys. They have fun with it. They don't take it too serious. And
right.
It's a shame, you know. And I know Barkley has said like he's on record. He basically said like if TNT doesn't get the contract, he's going to retire.
Yep.
Which you know, and that kind of sucks for everybody because he's one of the more entertaining guys in the business for the NBA. I don't really love Barkley for college basketball, but I really enjoy him for the NBA. So I think you know it's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, he's getting – how about this, guys? How would you like for the sports – he's getting $10 million, which I think is a deal for TNT, by the way, when you got guys like Luke Bryan and different ones. And I'm not knocking them, but like
– Luke I mean, Bryan.
You'll understand in a second. American Idol, those judges are getting like $25, $30 million for much much smaller time on television as far as the length of the season. And you got a guy like Charles Barkley from October to what, June? And he's getting $10 million. I think that's a real big bargain, but I love that. That's one of the only.
You get network versus cable. And I would imagine the ratings for American Idol are probably higher than the NBA halftime and pregame shows.
Well, that's probably true. And they're willing to, you know, pour. That's how they get those big stars for those shows, for the Voice and American Idol. Anyway. I wanted to mention that. And one more thing, guys, I read an article today. Matt, you're going to love this. We talked about last week, and we're going to, I promise those of you that look tuning in for the depth chart, and we'll talk about that a lot. But I wanted to mention this really quick. So we talked about last week about how Florida State and Clemson are trying to get out of the ACC. And you know, I heard this best this week, guys, that Matt and Kyle, you'll appreciate this because you guys have been working for years. This is the best analogy I've heard about Florida State and Clemson. When you have a job, make sure you have another job before you quit that job that you have. And it looks like Clemson and Florida State, they basically are threatening to quit their job, but there's no job to go to. The Big 12, they may not even want them.
I call bullshit. If Clemson and Florida State can get out of the ACC, Big 12 will take them.
But right now, the Big Ten and SEC don't want them. But they're going, guys, they're going up to as many as, this is what's crazy. I read today, as many as 10, you heard me right, 10 ACC schools for the Big 12. I mean, is it the Big 30? I don't even, what is it? Would that be 24 teams? 22, 24 teams? Help me out, JR. I see that you're in our group chat now. Something like that, but it's something absurd. But basically, you know, we were talking about the Big Four, if you will, because it's definitely the Power Four. It's looking like it's getting ready to be the Power Three in a hurry. And they're going to be Clemson and Florida another year or two in the ACC, and that's it. That's all they're going to have.
Yeah, it's really pretty amazing job by the Big 12 commissioner because there was a point about over a year ago where that conference looked like it was going to completely dissolve. It was dead in the water.
Yes, sir.
When they lost Oklahoma and Texas, I mean, that, you know, there were rumors that maybe East Carolina would wind up in the Big 12. You guys remember all that?
Oh, yeah.
The last time I will ever get my hopes up for any conference.
No, the Pac-12 last year. You remember when we were all going to – when Stanford and Cal and Washington State and Oregon State were all going to stay together and the American and some Mountain West schools were going to merge with the Pac-12. That was around this time last year.
You're right.
That was a serious discussion. We really thought that might happen.
Yeah, that was very close.
That was, and you know, it made so much sense. Like to your point, I mean, that was a really exciting thought when you looked at it on paper. I remember there was a guy on Twitter.
Yeah, I'd like to slap him around because he's a lying son of a bitch.
he did some graphics. He really did. Like he was wrong about everything, but he did some graphics, and that conference that he proposed. It was exciting. It would have been pretty awesome, but hey, you know, it's fool me once, I will not fall for that again.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to look at...
Now, if the Big 12 take, and we'll get to fall camp here in a minute, but if the Big 12 takes 10 ACC schools, if that were to actually happen, hey, there'd be four ACC schools left, we might get in the ACC at that point.
Absolutely. So I was going to ask you that. That's the only way because, by the way, I don't have my... There's, I believe it was eight. I sent it to you, Kyle, but I believe in your text, I don't have my phone right now with me. That's what happens when you have kids. They love technology. But it was about how many AAU schools. I believe off the top of my head, there was eight schools in the ACC that have that accreditation. We talk all the time about that we go to, say, potential candidates for the Big Ten. But I don't think that there's any – I don't think they're going to expand any. I think right now the only team that I see that moves the needle, Matt, what do you say, Notre Dame as far as the Big Ten? They've been wanting them for years, but even they would have to be pretty much cut out of the playoff or something crazy for them not to do their stay independent. I mean, they're getting ridiculous amount of money for their TV contract, and they've got rich alums everywhere. And they have the Subway alums, as they call them, people that are huge fans of Notre Dame across the country that never even went there. So that brand is the only one that I can see really moving the needle for the Big Ten. If they don't take Florida State and Clemson, the only other one that I see is Notre Dame that could really drive their bargain or their TV deal or if they renegotiate it, per se.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Notre Dame geographically is a perfect fit. Not that we've learned geographically doesn't really matter much in college football anymore, but Notre Dame's a perfect fit for the Big Ten. So you know, but the thing is, like, Notre Dame views themselves above any conference from a branding perspective, and with their TV contract and whatnot, I don't know if it'll ever happen. But you know, I think Florida State and Clemson definitely bring a lot to the table. You know, they clearly want out of the ACC. So you don't know what's going to happen there. I don't see really either one of those teams in the Big Ten. If anything, I could see the Big 12 expanding and they wind up in the Big 12.
How about this? Kenneth says, and we'll get your comments, guys, in a little bit for different things. But Kenneth says, welcome to the American Wake Forest and Boston College.
Yeah, I don't think that would be the case. I think if this hypothetical scenario plays out where supposedly 10 schools go to the Big 10, excuse me, to the Big 12 from the ACC and you have four left, you know, unless the league votes to be dissolved, then I think it'll probably be what happened with the Big East, where which became the American, where the four left, take who they want from the American and keep going. But I don't know how many schools have to leave the league to dissolve it. And it 10 may be enough. And in that case, yeah, you could see some schools from the ACC end up in the American. But anyway, guys, you know, We you know, all this hypothetical BS and you know, conference expansion and all that, and you know, that's fun to talk about, but I don't know about y'all, but it's about real football time. Practice starts Wednesday. So yep. I wanted to ask Matt. Matt, when you came in, you know, now you got so many guys in the transfer portal, but there is still freshmen coming in from high school. So I want to start there. when you remember your first day of practice at East Carolina, as a Division I athlete coming out of high school, what was that like? You know, the acclimation, obviously, you know, that was under Logan. Shit, he did 3-a-days, not even 2-a-days. So it ain't quite like it used to be. But just talk about that for the freshmen. What a shock it'll be to their system.
Yeah, it's a great question. Like, and I actually remember the first minute I walked into the locker room on my first day. I remember, like, the first guy I saw was Walter Scott walking around, and Walter Scott was a big guy. He was a big dude, you know, and I remember kind of thinking to myself, like, you know, I was coming in at, like, you know, 205 pounds. I was like, damn, like, that's a Division I football player right there. And I remember that clearly, but, you know, it's definitely a shock to the system. I mean, you know, during that time you were going 3-a-days with weight room sessions in between and then film sessions built in all around that. So, you know, it was insanity. I mean, what you went through for a training camp back in those days, you know, you throw in the heat and everything else. And, You know, it was now it's a different game. You know, obviously they don't do that anymore. But, you know, the biggest thing I think for freshmen coming in is you're trying to learn the system and everything's moving really fast. Everything's coming at you fast. And you're trying to get the, you know, you're trying to play the game physically, but you're trying to mentally, you know, make sure you understand the schemes. And that can be the hardest part. And like what happens is when you're not understanding the scheme, it slows you down on the field because you're overthinking things. So the freshmen, you know, it's a big challenge for these guys to come in. You know, I'm a big fan of redshirt years if you're able to do it. Obviously, in today's game, that's not as, you know, common as it used to be. But it's a huge challenge, man. And, you know, these guys, I guarantee they're having some sleepless nights right now, some knots in their stomach getting ready for their first college football camp.
Hey, Matt, I wanted to ask you as far as when you were telling that, and I'm going to use one of your words, that schedule is brutal. How in the world can you do all of that and you have the academics to worry about? It seems to me the reason I love redshirting for football especially is you guys have gone through so much and you're having to make that transition from high school to college. And then you have not only all that stuff, but then, hey, wait a minute, there's this thing over here called school academics, and you've got to make sure that you stay eligible. So how do you manage all that, man? You talk about insanity. Wow.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, and the reality is your academics tend to fall to the wayside a little bit. You know, you kind of at least the first month or two, you know, in the program, because you're so focused on, you know, getting to practice and making it through practice and learning the schemes. And there's a lot of pressure to catch up fast. So academics can tend to fall to the wayside. And it's tough, man. You just have to balance it as best you can. But these guys, like, you can come in very mentally strong, but they still don't know what's going to be thrown at them.
What's the first day of camp? I mean, obviously it's different under every head coach. You know, Logan versus Mike Houston, first day, obviously helmets only. What is that like the first day of camp? Is it just getting everybody acclimated, you know, for the upperclassmen, establishing leadership? Obviously you're going to be, you know, you just in helmets, but you know, we're still still installing offensive scheme. So, but typically first day of camp, just from an atmosphere standpoint, what is that normally like?
There's nothing like the first day. I mean, like I said, it's exciting. You got the knots in the stomach. You know,
even usually, for upperclassmen.
Yeah, I mean, for upperclassmen, it's a little different. You know, you're excited to get going. Typically, you know the schemes. You know, like if you look at our defense this year,
not anymore. You got so many downs from the portal.
Yeah, well, that is true. I mean, and that's tough. But like, you look, if you just focus on like the seniors and the juniors that are in the program, they've been here for a few years. They know the schemes. So now they can just go out and focus on playing football without the mental aspect of it so much. But I mean, you raise a great point regarding the portal. That puts more pressure on the coaches because they have to get those guys up to speed fast. It's a lot more coaching that has to be done. And then, you know, from the perspective of the newcomers into the program, you know, they're just getting the mental reps. You know, those guys are coming in. They don't know the schemes. And there's going to be a lot thrown at them. And you really have to have good teachers. That's where, like, you know, you have the reason why some college coaches are great and others aren't so great. The great ones can teach. They can get those guys up to speed fast. So, you know, the bullets are going to be flying, so to speak, starting on Wednesday.
When you were here, you know, we got a new offensive coordinator, new offensive scheme. During your playing time, did you switch defensive coordinator or defensive scheme anytime you were during your time at East Carolina?
Actually, so during my time, the defensive coordinator was changed my freshman year. There was somebody who was before me, and I am drawing a blank on his name right now. Can't think of his name, but then Paul Jett came in my freshman year. So I had him all 4 years.
Right.
So you didn't
go through the change. Like, my point was, you mentioned the you know, guys knowing the scheme. Well, you got guys to know the offensive scheme because of spring ball, but really right now everybody's new to this offensive scheme.
Yeah, yeah, and there's no doubt about it. And like, so having, you know, Blake Harrell in place, you know, people are going to know that scheme. That continuity is great. You know, there's going to be a lot of learning. You know, what you do have to deal with a lot of are like position coach changes. So that can, you know, make things a little difficult year to year. But even as much as they have, like, he's going to be adding new wrinkles to the defense this year. So it's always evolving. You know, it's always evolving. But, you know, that you got to feel great about the defense coming in because you have experienced guys on that side of the ball who know the scheme. Offensively, it's going to be a lot more challenging. New offensive coordinator, two new quarterbacks, a lot of new faces, new offensive line coach. That's the side of the ball I think that's going to be, you know, they need to have a great training camp. And they need to be like really just locked into learning the system and getting ready for week one.
Hey guys, wanted to let you know for those of us that love the preseason and obviously the fall camp, as Kyle mentioned, camp starts on Wednesday morning at 9:40. Good news here, Kyle and Matt, is that Houston likes those morning practices, which means we probably will be able to get as many, I say that and not to jinx them, but as many practices. It looks like I checked the weather, guys, for the next 10 days, no rain in the forecast. So we hope that that will stay the same. But Monday is like Kyle talked about. The first two practices are helmets. That's Wednesday and Thursday morning. And then Friday afternoon is shells. And Saturday we get to talk to Coach Houston. Kyle, if you want to come over, that's Saturday afternoon. In fact, it'll be 3:40 to 5:50. So that right at 6 o'clock, we'll talk to Coach. But it looks like right now you've got a lot of great practices. And so far, that first part of camp all the way through, it's looking like the next 10 days, like I said, no rain. So hopefully we're less than $2 million away from the practice facility being funded. So even without the practice facility, so far so good when it comes to the weather to get these practices in.
Yeah, and practicing in the morning is always a good idea. Higher chance of shower and storms in the right. afternoon and evening, just how weather works. But in the summer. But Matt, I was going to ask you, in regards to practice, how much on the field practice do upperclassmen or on the field practice, on the field coaching do seniors and juniors do to freshmen? How much help, you know, are you guys just worried about, you know, making sure you retain your starting job, worried about yourself, or is there some coaching that goes on from the upperclassmen to the freshmen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And really quick, I see Irving Bennett, he mentioned Coach Rowe. It was actually Larry Coyer was the defensive coordinator before I came in, where I came in. So just to throw that out there. But good question, Kyle. I mean, you know, you're definitely focused on your own position. You're focused on making sure that you continue to be, if you're a starter, you have to maintain that role because there's always somebody new coming up to take your spot. But at the same time, you know, my mindset was always like, you know, if there's a younger guy that has questions, I don't mind going out of my way to help that guy because it's good for the team.
You want to win, right?
Yeah, you want to win. You know, so that was always my mindset, like to try to, you know, be a team oriented guy. But, you know, you hear stories like the one that comes to mind is Brett Favre. When Aaron Rodgers was drafted, it's kind of a famous story that Favre would not go out of his way to help him at all. Wouldn't give him any help. You know, he wasn't going to give him any tips, like nothing. He's like, this is my job. You need to go earn it. So there's definitely the competitive aspect. Like you're looking at the guy behind you trying to take your job and you're like, hey man, like, you know, good luck, but you're not taking this job from me. And so it's really competitive, but it's there's definitely some of that that goes on.
And one thing I had a question, I know Kyle, maybe you're going to ask it, but when it comes to conditioning, I know that there's a big difference between individual workouts that you're doing. And then you have like the summertime with now Big John. Of course, we had Coach Connors back in the day, but how much is that where like guys, like are the guys really rusty and in bad shape, Matt, coming into fall camp? I know it depends on the individual, but as a team, did you see like some teams you played with that y'all looked great in the first practice as far as conditioning and then others not so much?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you guys that, like, if you come into fall camp out of shape, there's something wrong with you because you've had all summer, you've had the whole off season to train. And if you come in out of shape, you have a personal problem in some way, like you're just not working hard or you're not dedicated because, you know, especially when you have a guy like Coach Connors, like we came in shape, we were ready to go like from day one. And we were thrown into the fire, you know, right away. And we were ready. And I'm sure it's the same way now. Like you can tell these guys are working really hard. You know, they're conditioning. I don't anticipate any problems whatsoever, like with this team. Like they're going to be ready to go physically. By all accounts, they've had a great offseason in the weight room. I think the big thing is the mental aspect of it, learning the schemes and learning them fast. You have to learn fast. You know, it's going to go by in a blink of an eye. We're going to be lining up for the first game. So, you know, you got to get your reps efficiently.
You guys want to start with the breakdown? Are you ready, Matt, to do the breakdown of the different positions tonight? Because it looks like you were talking about Phil Steele earlier. We've talked all off season about how it's looking great for this team. The group chat, we've talked about you, me, Kyle, and Bubba about the off season. We're really happy, even though I know it's strange to say, I've said it many times, it's looking really good to be excited. And I can't believe I'm excited about this season after we went 2-10 last year and 1-7 in the league. It's hard to believe, but bringing in John David Baker with the transfer portal guys we have, with the defense coming back, just want to get your take before we get into position by position. It looks overall like a promising year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think when you really look at this team, you feel great defensively. You were able to keep Revel at corner. You have a lot of guys coming back, especially up front on the D-line, D-ends. You feel really good about what you have there. To me, and I'll throw it over to you, Kyle, I think this team is going to go as far as the offensive line can take them. I think that's the biggest question mark still with this team. I think you brought in two really good talents at quarterback. I think there's going to be a major competition here in camp. But I feel like we're going to come out of that with good quarterback play. To me, it's going to go as the offensive line goes. And that's the biggest question mark with this team. Well, you know, I'll kick it over to you, Kyle.
Yeah, the O-line, you know, while they weren't very good last year, they didn't have a quarterback. And the O-line coach and Donnie Kirkpatrick, from what I hear, really did not get along. That O-line has a lot of experience. We got everybody back. We brought in the kid from Maine who was, you know, an FCS All-American or whatever he was. He All-Conference, whatever. Very successful at the FCS level for the Black Bears. So you got him added to the mix, and then we have everybody back. Another thing to think about with the O-line, Matt, is, you know, we're going to a true spread. You know, or is it going to be a true air raid? Is it going to look more like Ole Miss? I got a feeling it's going to look more like Lincoln Riley's offense, to be honest. Maybe the 2013 version, 14 version, we'll see. But those O-line typically take wider gaps, and you get rid of the ball so much faster, and you also the tempo, it wears down the D-line. Right. So I think some of that right there from a schematic standpoint is going to help this offensive line, in my opinion. In terms of the quarterback situation, you know, it sounds like Coach JDB, John David Baker, does not want to go into the first game without naming a starter. Sounds like he wants to have that starter named as soon as possible. So, you know, you anticipate maybe 2 weeks into camp, we have a starter named. Who knows? It's going to be key to manage that situation properly because you don't want to lose either one of those guys in case one goes down, whether it be Hauser or Garcia that wins that starting job. But, I do think there's some things with this O-line that, and I like our new O-line coach. He's got a great resume, great reputation. But I do think there's some schematic things that are going to help this offensive line. Matt, have you thought about that?
No doubt about it. You're absolutely right, 100%. And like, I never wanted to go away from the Lincoln Riley up-tempo style of offense. I always felt like trying to implement a power running scheme here was not going to work out at East Carolina. Right. So I love this move to go back to a more up-tempo spread attack. And I think, you know, to your point, I mean, there will be wider splits on the O-line. The ball is going to come out faster. I think just from a scheme perspective, it's just going to look a little more efficient for East Carolina. You know, I think I never felt great about the offense we were running last year. Just never got a great feeling about it. I think this scheme will fit us. I think we can recruit to it. And I think we've done a pretty good job in the offseason recruiting to it. So I think we're going to look very different offensively. I think where my main questions come in, right, when it's third and two and you got to have the first down, or if you're in the red zone, right, and you got to have a touchdown, you have, you know, let's say, you know, third down, third and goal from the 4-yard line. Can your offensive line give you enough to get over that hump? That's to me where it's like make or break. And, you know, we'll find out. I mean, we do have some pieces. We do have some experience. We also have some new faces in there. So, you know, hopefully those guys can get it done.
Hey, Matt, I had a question for you and Kyle. My son is downstairs playing the new college football game. I gave it to him today. Question for both of you. And, Kyle, you know where I'm going with this question. And maybe you guys, Matt, maybe you can help me. Both of y'all can. We talked about on the show last week, you know that Garcia is barely ranked higher than Hauser. But, you know, what I heard was it's a really close race. But if you had to go with Edge right now, what I was told is Hauser is more like a game manager. He's the guy that's going to get you down the field, not make a lot of mistakes. Garcia is more like a gunslinger between the two. But I just want to get your thoughts on both of y'all on the quarterback rating on the new college football game. Back in the day, you know, it may not matter about, you know, stats, but these video games are so much like real life now. It just makes you wonder.
One's an 80, one's a 79. The 80 got the start. I think that was based on arm strength. But in terms of who will win the job, and you know, I don't know. I've watched tape on both. What I've seen out of Hauser, he seems a little bit more mobile in the pocket to make things happen than Garcia. He's incredibly accurate on mid-range throws. And also what I've seen out of Hauser, at least on tape, he doesn't seem to be scared to throw the ball in the red zone. Garcia has a cannon. He's incredibly accurate on the deep balls. He can also pull it down and run it. But incredibly accurate on the deep balls and has a cannon. I know if Logan was here, which one he'd like. It would not surprise me. Based on the scheme, my guess is Hauser wins the job. But I, you know, it wouldn't be surprised to see either one win it. Matt, what do you feel? Looking at the depth chart, John David Baker talked about the receiving core here and talked about the pieces we brought in and some of the pieces we had here and how he thought, you know, last year at all the quarterback, they were greatly underutilized. He claims this is the best wide receiving core from a depth standpoint he's ever had. And I have trouble believing that being really? He was at Ole Miss.
I agree.
Wow. Being he was at Ole Miss. But he says that. He says he thinks this is the best wide receivers core
very deep
from a depth standpoint he's ever had. What are your thoughts on the wide receivers, the guys we brought? You know, Javari Patterson, I believe that's the kid's name. He's huge on, and the kid hadn't even caught a touchdown pass here, and he thinks he can be a star. You know, he's been here since Holton played here, and he just thinks he hadn't been used right. What are your thoughts on the receiving core? You obviously haven't seen it like he has, but do you think it could be as, you know, he thinks it could be a huge strength for us. And he, you know, he talks about he wants to do like Lincoln did and play a ton of receivers. And he thinks our second tier of receivers could start at a lot of schools.
Interesting. That's definitely high praise. I mean, I hope he's right. I hope he's right. I mean, I think we definitely have some pieces there. You know, Sowell, I think, is a guy that, and I hope I'm not butchering his name. I always say it wrong. Right. He's a guy that I think really came on to towards the end of the year last year. I think he was really you saw his progress as the season went on. So he's a guy you feel really good about coming in. I think you look at Winston Wright, you know, very talented guy, transfer from Florida State,
right.
Who's had a lot of success at this level. I think he fits in more in that slot type role. And so you bring in experience there and definitely like some playmaking ability. So I think, you know, really excited about, you know, what those two guys can bring. And then, you know, obviously you have Smith, the transfer from NC State, who by all accounts is a deep threat. Like he can really run. I think he's a 4.3 40 type guy.
Wow.
So, you know, you definitely brought in some nice pieces in the offseason to go along with what we have. So I do, I think there's a lot to feel good about. I really do. Now you got to go out and make plays on Saturdays, but I feel like we are light years ahead of where we were last year at this time.
From a pass catching standpoint, we brought in the tight end from Oregon, who caught, I believe, 8 touchdown passes there last year. Before that, he had caught quite a few touchdown passes at Ole Miss. So he played under JDB at Ole Miss. And then we brought in a transfer from Ole Miss who hadn't played much there, but is extremely talented. Tight end is, will block, obviously. You got to block a tight end. But in this scheme, he's utilized in the passing game a lot. Bringing the kid in from Oregon/Ole Miss that, you know, is good with catching the ball. What do you think about the tight end room, despite losing name to A&M?
Calhoun. I mean, I feel good about it. I think you're going to see this staff utilize the tight end a lot more than what we've seen. And I think you're going to see the tight end used in an H-back role as well, you know, lined up as an H-back, almost like a fullback, you know, in the backfield offset. I think you're going to see a lot of that. I feel really good about that signing, Kelly, from Oregon. Yeah. I think he fits.
He catches a lot of touchdowns for me on NCAA 25.
Yeah. Well, you know, he knows the system. He knows the scheme, and that's huge. So you feel good about him. You know, getting back to your question earlier about, like, what's the challenge of fall camp? Well, you just brought in a guy who knows the scheme. So he should be ready to go right away. And then by all accounts, I mean, you know, you have some good talent in that room. You look at Desario Riles, who played as a freshman last year. Very talented kid out of Florida. You know, he's going to make plays for you. I see him a little bit more as like a detached tight end where you could put him, you know, in the slot against linebackers and he can make plays. But then you throw in the guy from Ole Miss, very talented, another highly recruited guy out of high school with talent. So another room,
and again, you know,
really good about. Yeah, right. Yes. You know the system. Exactly.
So, no doubt. And I want to ask you guys, as far as, do you guys seeing one of the things I loved about in the past with a tight end is the fact that the catches in the middle of the field, where they can really take a big hit and they can, you know, it seems like there's such a, in my opinion, a mismatch when you have those big, solid tight ends that have really good hands, and all of a sudden they're in the middle of the field, they catch the ball, and you're like, where did that guy come from? He runs that cross pattern. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, we've had some great ones at East Carolina over the years.
Yeah.
You know, we really have. And you saw that the impact they would make on the field. So, yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. I mean, you have that big target, a physical target, who's tough to tackle. You know, it's tough to tackle a guy who's 250 pounds in the open field. So I love utilizing the tight end. And I hope we do a lot more of it, and I think we will.
Stevie says, what's up, guys? Stevie Fly.
What's up, Stevie? Welcome in.
And what's up, Stevie?
Robert's saying the running back transfer from Penn State might end up being a nice surprise as well. Do you guys want to talk running backs now?
Yeah, absolutely. You got Rajay missed fall camp or the majority of fall, or excuse me, spring practice with an injury. He'll be back, you know, knee injury. It wasn't his knee injury. It was something else. His second year off the knee injury. Rajay, you know, this needs to be his year to live up to what we saw as a freshman early on in the sophomore year. One thing I find interesting about Rajay is he can catch the ball really well. And in this offense, that could be a huge attribute for him, yep. his ability to catch the ball. You got Bond with a lot of speed. I can see him doing well in this offense. I would like to see him be able to catch the ball a little better with that speed he has. But and then you got Gunn Jr., a little bit more of a power back, and then you got the kid from Penn State, who I don't know much about, but you know, Penn State normally don't recruit slacks. So he should be a talented kid. What are your thoughts on the running back room, Matt, and particularly in this new offense, Rozier's ability to catch the ball out of the backfield as he showed in the past?
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly. I mean, really, really another room you feel really good about. Rozier now, you know, last year, his first year coming off of ACL, you could tell he just lost some of that burst. You know, he just didn't have some of that burst. But it's the second year. You know, you always see it. The second year off ACL is when you get back to 100%. You know, you saw it with Saquon Barkley with the Giants.
Right.
All these guys. So I expect Rozier to have a great year. I think you're going to see him with his burst back. I agree, man. I like to utilize his skill set, catching the ball out of the backfield. So you feel really good about him. Bond, obviously, he's the game breaker. He's the guy.
By the way,
I love him on the game, Dave. On the college football game, I use Bond a lot. Okay. I throw him screens and I get him the ball in space. But he's the home run hitter. I mean, you got to get him. I feel like you have to get Bond 10 to 13 touches a game. Touches, you know, whether it's running the ball or utilizing him out of the backfield, catching the ball on screens. I would even spread him out and, you know, use him to stretch the field a little bit with his speed. Yeah. But you feel great about him. Gunn, another talented guy who really didn't get much run last year.
He was a little nicked up, wasn't he, guys? From my that was the issue with it. He had a little bit of an injury. I can't remember what it was, but that hurt, no pun intended, that hurt him last year as far as playing time. He just didn't have – there was something going on there last year. But yeah. I like Gunn a lot. As Chuck just said that. I agree, Chuck. I like our running. I think our running back room. You could argue, but it's going to be a strong argument between the running back room and the tight end room, and the third one to mention, guys, the defensive line. Those three position rooms are the ones that you can make a strong argument, in my opinion, on between those three. What do you think? You guys are the football experts.
Well, according to John David Baker, our receiver room is our best room on the offense. So I'll take his word for it. On defense, yeah, our D-line room is solid. We have a lot of depth on that D-line. It ain't going to be like the 08 D-line where
right.
you got multiple or 09 D-line, rather, with multiple NFL talents, you know, from – you know, C.J. Wilson to Linville Joseph to, you know, so on. It's not going to be like that. But what we have is a lot of talented Division One D linemen with a lot of playing experience. And there's not a lot of drop-off from right. the first team to the second team. I think we're extremely deep on the D-line. I think we'll be able to sub guys in without very little drop-off. I think our D-line will be the strength of the defense. They're particularly good at stopping the run. We need to get a little bit better at the pass rush, but we should be really good up front with stopping the run.
Yeah, I think that's our best room. When I look at it, like if you were to ask me my opinion, I think that's yeah. our best room. Between I really like the defense. Yeah, a defensive line, defensive end. I really like it. I mean, you look at Deontay Johnson. You know, you look at Morris. It feels like Morris has been here for 100 years. But,
exactly.
But man, he's a warrior. I mean, he's just a warrior. He shows up. You look at Lampley. I really like Chad Stevens. I mean, he's a baller.
Yeah.
He's a guy who really came on last
Very
year.
Underrated, right?
Very underrated player. You have some dudes in that room. You really do. You know, you bring in another defensive tackle from Ohio State, McKenzie. You now bring in an edge rusher from Louisville, Craig. So you have guys, you know, that hopefully to your point. Now, I agree, Kyle, 100%. We've got to find the guy who can bring pressure, you know, in a third and eight situation, you're bringing pressure off the edge. Who can get home and make a play? Maybe Craig can be that guy. But that's a room like we can win with this defense, I'm telling you. We can win a lot of games with this defense because there's plenty of talent there.
Guys, if you think about it, I want to put this out there to you. You think about it. If we, and you know, hindsight is always 20/20, and this sounds very mean. I'm not trying to be mean, but there was the nicest way I can put this, and you guys, I think, will agree, there was very little imagination on offense last year. You take the defense of Blake Harrell, and you take the imagination of JDB, and I'm telling you guys, we're hearing, and Kyle's tired to hear me talk about it, but if the guys that know JDB say that we can put 30 to 35 points on the board every game, if we do that with our defense and we can stay healthy on defense, for example, Phil still may be right to win 9 or 10 football games this year.
Yeah, and I'm not tired of hearing you talk about that. If we can average over 30 points a game on offense, which is a big if, but if we can do that, if the defense is as good or better than it was last year, yeah, we'll be a very good football team. I mean, we'll be very good. 8, 9, 10 wins, yes. The question is, I do think at some point in the season we will be averaging over 30 points a game. The question is, how fast will that happen? You know, are we going to be clicking, you know, game one's against Norfolk State, so let's really go game two, Old Dominion. Are we going to be clicking, you know, in that ODU game where we can do that, or is it going to be, you know, the Charlotte game before we're able to start doing that? So I think it depends on win-loss total, how fast that offense clicks. But talking about the depth department, we talked about the D-line.
What about linebackers?
Yeah, linebackers, we lost some pieces. That would be the biggest question mark, in my opinion, on defense, probably the linebackers. Matt, what you played linebacker. What is your thought on the linebacker room?
Another room I like. I mean, you know, I like Mike Edwards. I do like Mike Edwards a lot. You know, you look at our middle linebackers, not as big as like when I played. Like, we had like 5 middle linebackers who were 250 and could run. Guys like Libiano, Marvin Burke, and Carlos Brown, you know, big dudes who could run. These guys are smaller in the 220 range, but they can really run. So they fit our scheme well. You know, I like what Edwards brings. We brought in a transfer from Missouri too. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but you know, another guy who I think can contribute there. And we have a lot of youth in that room when you look at it. I feel like I just sounded like Joe Pesci from
you did family. A little bit.
Yeah. We got some youth.
The jersey came out in Simmons right there. I love you, Simmons. I love it.
But a lot of youth in that room. But I do feel like, you know, we're in pretty good shape there too. And then you look outside. I mean, you have guys like Sam Danka, who, you know, Mike Houston raves about him, you know, for a few years, but he hasn't really found his niche yet. You know, in this scheme. And, you know, you look at Kingston McKinstry at the nickel and some of the things he can do and coming up and supporting the run. I mean, you feel really good. You feel really good about what you have. And the thing that I really like about the defense in particular is if a guy goes down, you now have depth behind those starters. So, you know, it's you have a chance to do something really special, I think, on that side of the ball.
You remember Houston's first year here? It wasn't – that's the thing that people were saying about D-line, Matt and Kyle. Jalen Price and Alex, those guys. The first string was pretty good, but we had nobody behind them. Do you remember that in 2019?
Yeah.
It wasn't like we had a bad D-line. We just – they can't play the amount of snaps they were playing.
Yeah, and this D-line has been built old school, and these guys have stayed you know, the staff has built this D-line. We talked about D-line and linebackers. Safety room, we lost some talent. You know, I think we still have talent on safety. We, you know, the kid's name is – forget the kid's name that we lost. It was a really good run stopper at safety. Somebody can help me out with that. But, Matt, what are your thoughts on the safeties room?
I think you're good there. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, one guy that like kind of jumps out to me is Omar Rogers, who was a transfer from Elon. And, you know, he was a little banged up last year. But I think he'll contribute much more. He's a reliable guy back there who has a lot of experience. You know, you look at D. Nash, who was a transfer from North Carolina. He came in last year, another really talented guy.
Yeah, we lost Kyle.
And then you have Huff. You know, Huff is another one. So you have a lot of guys. You know, I think whoever wins that job, I think there's some questions there. Like, I could see 3 different guys winning that starting job. I do think you'll see multiple guys play there. And then, you know, I did mention McKinstry at strong safety, another guy with experience who you feel really good about. So, again, depth, you know, on that side of the ball, you feel really good about the depth. They've recruited well. You know, it seems like we've brought in 100 DBs in the last few recruiting classes. So, you know, you should be in a good spot there.
Yeah, and Kyle, you the guy who was talking about Julius Wood, Robert put that we lost there at safety.
Yeah, Julius Wood, obviously a great run stopper. We're going to miss him. But there are still some pieces there, as Matt mentioned. But we will miss Wood. The question is, I don't know that we have anybody who can come up and stop the run as well as he did. But, you know, with a good linebacking group and good defensive line, maybe we don't need somebody so much to stop the run from the safety position. But, we, you know, we're solid there. And then in the back end at corner, you know, one of those corners is elite. Matt, what is your overall thought on the corner room?
I feel really good with, obviously, Revel is a guy that, you know, yeah, has a chance to get drafted next year. I thought we did a really nice job keeping him.
In yes, sir.
You know, we easily could have lost him.
He was offered $350,000 to go to the SEC.
Is that, yeah, well, yeah. So,
and according to Igo, he's our highest played player. I'd like to know what he's making. It's certainly not going to be $350,000. My guess is it's north of $100,000, though.
Oh, yeah.
I would think. But credit to him for staying here. Like, I mean, yep, so easy to take the money and run, but like.
Especially after 2-10 season, right? And you have the SEC calling.
Yeah. You would think that he's just endeared himself to Pirate Nation, and like he deserves a lot of support from our fan base this year. And you know, but he's been in the scheme.
Fan favorite.
Fan favorite. He's really solid in this scheme. He brings length. He can run. He can make plays. So he's the guy you really lean on. And I expect him to have a monster year. Like I could see him being first team all AAC and, you know, somebody that's going to make a lot of plays for us.
Preseason All-American, some publications. Yeah, and I don't mean conference. I mean All-American as an All-American.
Yeah. Is that Devon King and Gavin Gibson should contribute to safety as well? Or is it Devin or Devon?
Devin King.
Devin King, okay.
Yeah, Gavin Gibson, we got him in the portal from Maryland. He's kind of looks to me, I think he's a nickel. I think you'll see him play a lot of nickel with McKinstry. But another solid player.
We've got a lot
fold here.
You know what's great is they used to, like we were talking about with the lack of depth when Mike Houston got here. And now, you know, we're learning about all these players, and thank God for Matt. He's got an apartment. He told us last year in the transfer portal. So how is that apartment going, by the way, Matt? You've been living there. Hopefully Chrissy doesn't mind.
The portal giveth and the portal taketh, you know, and we see it from both ways. But I do think we did well there. You hate the portal when your guys leave. You curse it up and down. You know, the portal sucks. I can't stand it. But then when you bring in a player, you bring in a Hauser, you know, you bring in a Winston Wright, you love the portal. So it's funny how that works, you know.
But yeah, I think overall this year we benefited from the portal more than we lost to the portal this time around.
And Matt, and here's the thing, guys, you know I'm going to pitch it, but you've got to I'm giving $50 a month to Team Boneyard. I know Kyle is, but it's like we've got to step it up. The reason why we're doing well this year with a transfer portal is we've really stepped up our game. Kyle alluded to that with Sharon Revel. It's like we've got to get more money in Team Boneyard as much as possible. I know people, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but that is the real deal. That is why. And Kyle,
well, you kind of overstated, Dave. Put it like this, you know, Siobhan Revel, Revel, however you say his name, was offered $350,000 to go to the SEC. As loyal as he is, and as much as he knows he can be a star here and have a chance to be drafted high in the NFL draft coming out of East Carolina, if we couldn't pay him $100,000-$150,000,
right?
There's no way he stays. You know, so. He's, you know, per Igo, the highest paid player on our team now. So, yeah, NIL is very important in today's age. You give the team Boneyard. if you want us to keep competing at the at this level and be successful. And I think the proof's going to be in the pudding, so to speak. I think this year, with the money that was put into NIL this offseason, to get us over $2 million, I believe. I don't know the exact number, but I believe it's over $2 million for our football war chest for this season. If the money we've spent equals two wins, I think people will continue to give to NIL. So I think it's going to be on the field performance. People get a chance to see what they paid for this year, and I think that's going to be the biggest thing for NIL. If it proves to be successful this season, I think people will continue to give. People like to win.
No doubt about it. After last year, we're hungry for wins. And Matt, speaking of wins, I've been asking folks, and we haven't had a chance. I know I want to give a shout out to your great son, Chase, who is, you've had a busy summer. Your daughter, Avery, is going to South Carolina. Your son, Chase, is doing very well, and hopefully we can get him recruited in the purple and gold. That will be a very special moment. But anyway, if we have any baseball people, Chase Simmons is the real deal. And he may be coming from Connecticut, but the kid can play baseball. See Matt Simmons on that one. But anyways, I've been enjoying. It's been awesome to watch what you send us stuff. It's really cool. But as far as I know you had a busy summer. You have the first time back with us. What's your take on Phil Steele saying, one of the models shows 10 wins? Are you that bullish, or are you like cautiously optimistic? I mean, how many wins are you thinking this year?
Man, 10 is that's 10 strong. Is definitely bullish, and I like the optimism. I think we need at least 8. I think we need 8. I can see 8. I think the key. I think one of the keys when you really look at this season, and Kyle talks about this a lot. And I think you're spot on. You have to win that game at ODU. You really have to win that game. I think that's a huge game. Obviously you're going to get Norfolk at home. You go get ODU, then you have App State and Liberty. And, you really would like to – I mean, obviously, if you can come out of that 3-1, you feel great. You feel great about what you have in front of you. If you come out of that 2-2 –
or 1-3.
You're still in pretty good shape. If you come out of that 1-3, now you have an uphill battle. So I think that ODU game is the one that can really like propel you forward or can set you back.
I agree, but I will say this. I will say this about that ODU game. ODU won 6 games last year. They beat App State and Norfolk. It is possible. It is possible for us to lose to ODU and turn around and beat up App State the next week. You got an East Carolina team that's a little better than maybe they looked at ODU. You got App maybe just upset Clemson, comes in here thinking they're going to stomp a hole in us. You got an electric crowd. And then all of a sudden that ODU loss don't matter so much if we beat App State. But with that said, I sure would rather beat App or ODU, get that out of the way, be 2-0, and have a chance to be 3-0. But, yeah, overall I do agree with you. That ODU game is very important week two. I think it kind of sets a tone. But with that said, if we lose it and we play well, I think ODU is just better than what people realize. I think if you took a poll of the average person, I don't know how many people realize they went to a bowl last year and that they beat App State Norfolk last year. I think if you ask most people, they don't realize that, even people in this area.
Kenneth's saying, I think we lose 2. He's saying at Army and at Liberty. I definitely, the at Liberty game is going to be really hard, and maybe you could argue with the, is Army going back to more of a triple option again?
They actually did that the second half of last year. They are. I don't know. A lot of people are bullish on Army this year. They went 6-6 last year. They had a very weak schedule. I'm not saying Army's not going to be a good football team, but look, they don't do NIL.
That's right.
While they've always been at a recruiting disadvantage, I think you're going to see them drop more and more. And I know, by the way, historically, maybe the script flipped this year. Who knows? We've never lost to Army ever, and we've never beaten Navy and Greenville. So who knows? Maybe that flips this year. We lose to Army in West Point. We beat Navy and Greenville. Like to beat them both. But if he's right and we lose two games and it's to Liberty and Army, I'll take it because that means we're 10-2 and probably playing for a conference championship with the one conference loss.
Hey, Matt, Robert's asking, speaking, is Matt going to the Army game? And then he's asking, being that's in West Point, and then any in Dowdy?
100% Army, Robert. That's an awesome place to go.
October 19th.
Yeah, West Point in October. That's an awesome trip. I definitely encourage all the Pirate fans to take in that trip. It's a lot of fun. So absolutely Army. And no question, at least one other game, possibly two. I would love to get there for the App game. I would love to get to Greenville for the App game. I think that's going to be a good environment. So, yeah.
Elliot's saying, Dave, Florida Atlantic game is on Thursday night on ESPN in Greenville. Then the next Thursday at Tulsa, two back-to-back Thursday night games. I think I've mentioned this before. In the 90s, when you were playing, Matt, I used to love Thursday nights for the exposure. We didn't seem to play very well. My memory serves me right on Thursday nights. But anyway, I just, my Thursday night games, I don't like Monday night football for a pro from the team I pull for, because we don't, especially in the last couple decades, we play horrible on Monday night football. And for my college team being East Carolina, Thursday nights used to be special because it used to be the only game in town. And now there's a whole bunch of game on Thursday night. So it doesn't have the mystique, if you will. It's kind of oversaturated in my opinion. And an NFL game on. So Thursday nights are not what they used to be. However, you know, maybe it won't matter this year.
Well, from a win-loss standpoint, I think you got to look at a lot of the opponents we've had on Thursday night. But one home game on a Thursday night doesn't bother me.
Yeah, and the this at Tulsa, right?
Yeah, well, we have Florida Atlantic at home in Greenville on a Thursday. Right. And then one at Tulsa. But in terms of you know, a road game, who cares? But home game on a Thursday night doesn't bother me. And if you're going to do them, if you're going to have two of them, it's better that they're back-to-back because then you can have them like a normal week at least.
Right, that's
from the first one going into the second one.
And, Matt, I love the all three of us and Bubba, too, all four, we are Jersey nerds. And my gut feeling, you guys think that's going to be the blackout game?
I thought you meant New Jersey nerds. I was about to say we are.
Jersey. Yeah, I love Jersey. What's wrong with Jersey?
The blackout game, Florida Atlantic. What is it? That's in November?
Oh, that's right. That's November. Yeah, it'd probably be
soon. It's possible, or it could be. I believe the Temple game is around Halloween. I'd have to look at the schedule. But, yeah, Temple or Florida Atlantic, one or the other.
We did have a great blackout against Florida Atlantic several years ago when Justin Hardy was around. And stomped
that was a Thursday night game.
Yeah. So, hey, why not keep it going? Florida Atlantic.
Brandon's asking, Matt, being the Big Ten guy, have you guys heard any more about the rumor of the Northwestern home and home or a bye game potentially? Have you guys heard any more about that?
I've heard nothing more about it since it was discussed back in June. I don't know. That's a good question. It was brought up publicly on 94.3, and then brought up on Hoist the Colors, and really hadn't heard anything else about it. Good questions from Brandon. It's interesting that it was brought up and then went completely quiet, which tells me it might not happen.
November
7th. Man, I hope that happens. That would be a great home and home for us.
It would be
something, you know, different for the fan base, a team we haven't played, and you know, that I would be all for making that happen, but hopefully it does.
And Matt, I was saying, and we were talking about this a few shows ago, getting mid-tier, lower-tier SEC schools like a Vandy, getting the Northwesterns of the world, getting some of the other schools from the Big Ten. I know Kyle mentioned Maryland, which I would love to play. What about you're a New Jersey guy? What about Rutgers? You think that that would draw the need, and also it would help with recruiting, right? Because you're a Northeastern guy that was one heck of a player, and there's a lot of great guys we're leaving on the table. I feel like Northeastern guys, and maybe you could throw in Ohio and some of the maybe Michigan, some of the players in that Rust Belt that are really good football players that we could be recruiting, and going to Rutgers would be smart, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've always felt like Rutgers would be a really good series for us. Makes a lot of sense geographically. It's a nice, it's an easy trip. You know, you can recruit those areas, and you know, now Rutgers, I'll tell you, they've come a long way. Their home atmosphere is a lot of fun. It's a good environment. So, yeah, I'd love to see that happen. And I think it should. I think that would be a good series.
What about, we talked about a team that you played in the 90s that I miss. We talked about Southern Miss, obviously, but what about like Pitt and Syracuse, two teams that are in ACC, but they have good football programs. Maybe it was
Syracuse. I think the problem is they get enough exposure in this area, they're not going to have any interest in playing us.
Okay. I wish they would, because that would be, those are two games I think that we used to play back in the day that really would, we've got to be playing teams. I'll tell John Gilbert, you know, I understand the North Carolina and NC State deal. That'll handle itself. And I give you a pass on those two teams. What I don't understand is there's a lot of teams, and yes, it is harder to schedule than some of the previous athletic directors. I will give you even that. However, there's a lot of great teams that we have out there, like a Pitt, like a Syracuse, Southern Miss, that you were just at as athletic director, that we
we could easily get a home and home with Southern Miss. I mean, that's just something that he hasn't wanted to do, probably because, you know, one, maybe it ties to there, things didn't end so well. Obviously, you got the Brett Favre welfare scandal and all that, that Gilbert's name was brought up in briefly. So I don't know. Maybe that's why he don't want to do it. Maybe he doesn't see value because of the distance and travel. If he can play a Sun Belt school that's a lot closer. But I think the fan base would like to see it. I think a home and home, it doesn't have to be a long-term series. Just a two-game home and home and see how it does. I think the fan base would be very interested in it. And that's one we could easily get. Another thing I would do is I would talk to UCF. We always had a good relationship with UCF. Yep. You know, out there in the Big 12, they would like to play us anytime in the future and continue that series. You got to have some Power 5 conference schools coming here.
And yeah, Vandy, Vandy would be worth it to have, because Kyle talked about it.
What about Vandy? Worth it? Yeah, I think Vandy, yeah, even a 2-for-1, because it would be two trips to Nashville, so it would be great trips
for the fan base.
For the fan base, yes, to go to Nashville, straight shot down I-40,
easy,
very drivable.
Yep.
Great place to visit, and then you get them in Greenville and SEC. Any SEC school. If you can get them in Green, I'd do a 2-for-1 with Northwestern also. You know, I don't really want to do a bye game with Northwestern. No. I hope that's not being talked about. But I would do a 2-for-1 with Vandy or Northwestern. It's a different time. And, you know, I know Gilbert's not very big on 2-for-1s, but you got to have some Power 5 teams coming to Greenville.
Yeah.
Unless there's a split. If there's a split, then it just ain't going to happen anymore.
I'll give you guys two I'd like to see. First one you might laugh at, but I like the idea of UConn, you know, keeping UConn on the schedule.
We said Power 5,
a home and home.
Oh, yeah. You just want them to come there because you live there.
I think it's a nice series. I think it's a winnable series. I think you have that UConn, even though they're a basketball school, but you know, you have the UConn name.
I agree with
you. The other one, guys, that I'd like to see is Georgia Tech. I'd like to see Georgia
Atlanta
Tech.
Market.
I really would. I think that would be great for our fan base. You know, I think it's a team, to my knowledge. I don't know if have we ever played Georgia Tech.
Not that I can remember. Again, though, Matt, I kind of use the same thing I would say with Pitt and Syracuse. They get enough exposure in this market. But what interest would they have in playing us?
But again, like you said, the 2-for-1, and maybe you play a game. And hey, Matt, Kyle. Kyle mentioned before, Matt, you know, if you do a 2-for-1, maybe you say we'll take our home game to Charlotte even. I mean, whatever we have to do, there's got to be creative ways, and we're not anti-administration. We are not at all. I just think that when you look at it, there's 134 teams that keeps going up. Is that right, guys?
I believe that's right, yeah.
I think
that's all.
Yeah. Kennesaw State, I have no problems playing them. I think there's so many great teams, and there's a lot of people like myself who are excited about potentially. By the way, Matt, what are your thoughts on the bye game in 29 with Clemson? We haven't had a chance to ask you that.
I love it. I love those matchups, marquee matchups for us. It gives our, you know, a chance to play the, you know, the best out there. And I don't like it every year, but right. I thought, unfortunately, last year, you know, like the game at Michigan, it was really bad timing for East Carolina, you know, because we just didn't have a good team last year.
If it was the year before, it would have been better.
Would have been so much better. I feel like it would have been, you know, I'm not saying we beat Michigan, but I think very competitive game in a lot of aspects. And, you know, but I like those games, you know, whether it's every couple of years. I love the game down at Florida several years ago.
Oh, yeah, in 2015. Man, we had them on the ropes.
We did. Should have won it. You know,
you were there, right?
I was there, yep. When that ball, when Kemp fumbled on the last play, God. I was had a heart attack. But
it's like the 20-yard line?
Yeah. Well, no, we were going in. We would have won the game right there. There was a receiver.
We would have had to either go for two or kick an extra point to go to overtime or go for two. It wouldn't have been a win. It would have been a situation where if we'd have scored there, then it would have – Ruffin said he would have went for two in that situation. So
Interesting.
Man, I'll tell you what, that was to me, that's what makes college football. And I'm not getting on a soapbox, but I really believe if we do the split, and I understand why they're doing the split. However, the whole thing with March Madness, and I'm not trying to make basketball better than football because I really do love football, and I'm glad that we have the program we have at East Carolina, or I would not be a college football fan. It were not for us being a football school. But I do like the David versus Goliath. I like the Matt Semenzas of the world. The 90s ECU football team that were giant killers. I mean, we killed a lot of teams. Miami, you could go on the whole bunch of teams that nobody would have said there's no way in the world that East Carolina is going to win. Now there's a storyline there. You can forget about it. And I also think that you're not growing the sport. You're hurting the sport. The sport could be the number one sport in the entire nation, but NFL will always be number one because the college football people are your own worst enemy. Sorry. It hurts because I really want to see I would really like to see the sport of college football grow. So I'm not a hater at all. It just is frustrating when you see there's so much potential for the sport to grow. And, you know, you have a Greg Sankey. He can say all day long, well, my job is to protect the SEC. Well, it is. But you need to grow the sport, or if not, the only people eventually that's going to care about it are all just in the SEC.
Yep. The NCAA cares about the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yep.
And everybody after that is kind of gets the scraps.
Is there, talking about the split really quick, is there any hope for East Carolina to be able to make that jump? Is there even a fighting chance that we can do it? Well, how do you see that? How is the path to victory? Because I know it's doubtful, but how would you – I'm going to make both of you ADs or co-ADs. How do you pull it off to be able to make that leap where you're going from – we were talking about at the beginning of the show for people joining us now or just in a little while ago. We were talking about early in the show about going from 85 scholarships to 105, and the reason they went back to 85, guys, wasn't it to be more competitive where more people had a chance? Can we fund 105? I mean, another thing is, Matt, don't you want to hold back on some scholarships? So if I've got a guy that's a walk-on, you see that all the time on SportsCenter. Hey, we gave Matt Semenza was a walk-on and we gave him a full scholarship this week. And you have that great moment on SportsCenter, or on game day rather.
I think in football, you know, it's a 20 scholarship increase. Can we compete at that level? Probably. But, you know, the baseball thing is even more concerning. 30-some scholarships.
34.
That's insane. So I think our days of chasing Omaha are probably over. Unfortunate, sad, but true. I think a split's coming. And at this point, I almost welcome it. I know a lot of people probably hate to hear that, but it just is what it is. How to get us to that next level? Well, we're not getting in the SEC or Big Ten or even the Big 12. So how do we, you know, go up a level, make a little more money? My guess it would be one of two ways. One, the ACC loses a bunch of schools.
That's what
and that was my thinking. And you know, let's say they lose 8-10, and maybe somehow we end up in the ACC, or if the Pac-12 reforms as a group of five super league, so to speak, with Washington State and Oregon State leading the way, and then instead of them just joining the Mountain West, they take the best of the Mountain West and then the best of the American and maybe a couple teams from the belt and form a group super of five league. Super league called the Pac-12 or Pac whatever. I would use that Pac-12 branding with Oregon State, Washington State leading the way. I would think those are our two best chances of advancing ourselves. What we got to do is start winning. That's you know, we can't do anything about our media market. We our strengths are our fan base and what we can draw. We have a huge football stadium for a group of five. So that's our strengths. We need to start winning again to fill it up. I think when East Carolina wins at a high level, we get pretty good attention because of how rabid our fan base is. I think, you know, people like to see us win when we are winning from a national standpoint. But anyway, to answer your question, simple answer is to win. The more complex answer would be if the ACC loses a bunch of schools or if the Pac-12 reemerges as a group of five super league. I think that's our best chances of advancing ourselves.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. And, you know, we have something special at East Carolina. We have an incredible fan base. We have an incredible stadium and game day atmosphere. I can't say enough about what we have in that regard. We have passionate fans, but we do need to win. And I think it was very smart bringing in John David Baker. I think the scheme he runs can win it. I think – when you look at winning, like what entails winning, you have to have schemes that can work in Greenville.
Yeah.
And I think this type of offensive scheme is good for East Carolina. A high octane, up tempo. I mean, you talked about it before, Kyle. This gives you a chance to kind of level the playing field with the offensive line.
Yeah.
Because we can't get those guys that Michigan gets. We can't get the guys that Penn State gets up front on the O-line. But if you have a great scheme, and I think so, I think this was a really good move. I thought we had that, you know, under Ruffin, and then we kind of went away from it and tried to be, I think, something that we're not. So I really like this move, and I think you have to schedule appropriately. You have to continue to recruit and coach well, but you have to win games, you know. And when you look at the schedule this year, this is a golden opportunity for East Carolina. I mean, you know, this schedule lines up really well for Mike Houston in year six. And
no Memphis, no USF, and no Tulane.
Yeah.
So if you're going to win, look, if you're going to win the American, and look, you get Navy the very last game, and we could be going, it could be a super season, and we've never beat Navy at home. Guys, I mean, that you talk about Thanksgiving, that could be an early Christmas gift. We could be thankful that we finally get over that hump of beating Navy the very last game. In other words, my point with that is, you know, Houston talked about there, it was several years in a row that the schedule, the folks doing the schedule in American, they had Navy having the bye week right before us, like a few years with Houston in a row. And he brought that up at a press conference. So it's good to have them the last game of the year. And I you know, Kyle, we've talked about it a couple times, but it could be Semenza. I hope it's not, that we could be the difference of not going to a bowl and going to a bowl that last game of the year. I hope to God that's not the case. But, you know, there's all kinds of storylines that we don't know right now, obviously, because we haven't played the season. But if I had again, I'm going seven. I'm saying 7-5, but I could easily see where, you know, I Phil Stoll knows a lot more about football than I do, the college game, and he's having anywhere between 8, 9, or 10, right?
No, he didn't say that. He said that all six of his sets of power rankings or his computers for to make it easier, calls for us to go to a bowl, and one of us calls for us to go 10-2. He also has us as the most improved team in the country, but. So
here's a question Here's a question from Elliot real quick. Help me out, guys. He said they have us predicted seventh in the
media.
Yeah.
The American media.
Two and 10 season. They're not going to have us. I thought, Matt, we were talking about last week.
And that's 7 out of 14. So that's still, they still think we're going to go to a bowl. So, right. You know, seventh doesn't sound as bad as it appears. Steele has us picked fourth or fifth, but he notes that is the order of who he thinks is the best teams in the league. And he also notes we don't play three of his top four in Tulane, Memphis, and USF.
Again,
so Matt, I don't think, you know, I think if we finish seventh, that's probably a 6-6 type year. I you know, it'll be interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised if the offense clicks early. I'll say it again. If the offense clicks early, I don't think we would win the regular season, but I could see us fighting for that second place shot to be playing for the conference championship game if everything goes right.
We could be playing in December is what you're saying.
Well, we're going to be playing in December, I think, regardless. We better be for a bowl.
I know, but I'm talking about for
the conference game. I think it's possible. I think it's possible.
By the way, Irving says, unfortunately, with this schedule, we could go undefeated and easily miss the college football playoffs.
Liberty. Our schedule is not as easy as people need to quit with that BS. See Liberty last year. Look at their schedule compared to our schedule. If we go undefeated, we will have beaten App State and Liberty, who are considered the best teams in the so-called group of five. And also, you got to look at who your opponents play.
Army.
You know, you could be beating an App State team that just beat Clemson. If we go 12-0, 13-0 after winning the conference championship game, we will be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Matt, to your point there, Kyle, also you look at Old Dominion. How many teams last year, guys? It's a lot that were bowl teams last year.
Bowl teams are bowl eligible. Top player, yeah. App State was a bowl team. Old Dominion was a bowl team. Liberty was obviously, you know, New Year's Six bowl team. UTSA was a bowl team. Army was 6-6, but didn't go to a bowl because played two FCS opponents, and they got their six-win late against Navy. I'd have to look at the rest of the schedule off the top of my head. I know those were bowl teams.
Temple was not a bowl team. Charlotte was a bowl team.
No, Charlotte was not a bowl team, not even close. I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's see. Tulsa, not North Texas. Navy.
They were 5-7.
Florida.
Navy was not.
And that was, that was my point, guys. I'm glad Matt, when you look at the schedule, it's a lot of times because of our non-conference. But if you look at our conference schedule, it's tough at first. But somehow, if you can do well in that first half of the conference schedule, then you have Temple, Florida Atlantic, Tulsa, North Texas, and Navy.
A lot of people are big on North Texas and Florida Atlantic. We'll see.
Yeah, what did Florida Atlantic do in the offseason exactly to be?
I don't know. That's a good question, Matt. Yeah. We need to look that up because they were bad last year. And I know this is year two for Tom Herman. He's a good coach, but they were a pick ahead of us in the preseason poll, and they're coming to Greenville this year. They must have did great in the portal. We need to look that up. I have not researched Florida Atlantic, but I'm not big on them.
I think they got a quarterback, Cam Fancher, if I'm not mistaken. Was he at Marshall last year?
He may be.
Somebody who's watching this will know. Cam Fancher, I believe, is going to be the starting quarterback for FAU.
Eddie?
I know that name, Matt.
Yep.
Yeah. I really feel like with the schedule – like we're talking about, you guys mentioned, and I know that, Kyle, we're not saying, you know, like the must win. But having said that, you look at Norfolk State, you look at ODU. If you win the ODU game and you come home, that App State, John White, by the way, former pitcher for the Pirates under Coach O, he said, yes, it was Marshall. So thank you, John. We appreciate you very much. But that first half of the year, if you somehow can win those first two games and you have that App game at home, that place is going to be rocking because you're going to have both fan bases there. You know, you have that game. If you're 3-0 and you go to Liberty, you like your chances at 3-0 against Liberty, even though it's an away game, and Liberty is very, very good. Like we talked about, and they're going to be good again this year. They've got it rolling there in Lynchburg, But I feel good about, you know, your chances there. And if somehow the first four games you're 3-1, like Matt said, I agree with Matt wholeheartedly. You're looking really, really good. I believe so.
If we're 3-1 if we are 3-1 after our first four games, we are in great shape because I think all three of those games after Norfolk State are tough. ODU was a bowl team last year, and then we all know what happened. If you don't, you should know what Liberty is. Anybody who thinks, look, we are going to be underdogs probably in all three of those games. On the road at ODU, we would probably be about a 1-point dog, 2-point dog. Depending on how things go, we'll be underdogs against that. We'll be underdogs against Liberty. So this scenario that the schedule's so easy, I think people are freaking cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I think the conference schedule is somewhat easy, but anybody who thinks this non-conference schedule is easy because we don't have a Power 5 school up there really needs to do their research a little bit better. And remember, we were an F and 2-10 team. And check out App State's record over the last, decade. Realize they're not FCS and haven't been for a while. And probably check and see what Liberty did last year.
By the way, Elliot's talking about Phil Steele has one of his projections going 10-2.
Yeah, we've talked about that at nauseam.
Yeah, but
sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Right? You look at App. One of the reasons why they've been so good, and we talked about this earlier, recruiting to your scheme, having a scheme that works for your school.
Right.
App was smart enough, and they've had a lot of coaching changes over the years, but they've had a scheme in place that works for them, and they've stuck with it. And had a lot of tremendous amount of success with it. So when you look at like what East Carolina can do, I mean, App is what East Carolina was 25 years ago.
Exactly. I've been saying it for years, Matt. We need to steal our identity back. And I don't know how many of our players on the defensive side that care about it, but transfer portal so much, I don't know how many of our guys would get that. But App State, stole our identity, and we need to go get our identity back. That's a tough game, game three in Greenville. Oh, yes. But we do get them in Greenville. That's a game that it would be you want to light a fire under this fan base. Find a way to beat App.
Yep. Yeah, and here's another thing I want to say. Look at the job. You don't think leadership matters, and we've said this many times before. But Doug Gillen, okay, Doug Gillen is getting people. How is it that we say we can't get people to Greenville, North Carolina, but you can get teams? A lot of great teams are coming to Boone, and I'm not knocking Boone.
I haven't looked at their non-conference schedule, but I will say this. Charlotte, but proximity to Raleigh really isn't any different from us to Raleigh versus Boone to Charlotte.
It's
One of it is winning. You want to play good football teams that don't hurt your schedule. And while App can beat you, it's still a quality win if you beat them. And I think he's a good AD, and I think he does a good job scheduling. And where is the long-term, speaking of that, and I'm going to get off here pretty soon, guys, if we don't wrap it up. I got some things I need to do, but where is the long-term home and home of App State? That is one that we should have no trouble scheduling. I think both sides want it. So what is the holdup on getting that announced? I mean, maybe it's coming. It has to be, because there's two games left in the series and they're both in Greenville. After one in Charlotte, one in Boone, there's two in Greenville, one this year and one in a couple years. But we need a long-term series with App State signed here soon. Speaking of Doug Gillen and App State.
Yeah, in fact, James, is adding to your point, it's basically been the same thing in App since Jerry Moore was there, and absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were FCS, and they keep it rolling. And but Matt, guys, again, 134 FBS programs. You have tough times politically with we'll give you a pass or a little bit we can understand as far as the Power 5 games when it comes to ACC. However, I do believe there's a ton of teams in the ACC that would play us, and I think that it's just a matter of building relationships, and we need to stop putting so much emphasis on FCS when it comes to Let's spend, we can get those games. Let's spend more time focusing on getting the games in the bigger conferences, where if you win those games, yeah, you may say, well, it was not the top of the league, but that's what brings people the excitement, right, Matt? With if you have any of the Big Ten games, or you have any of the SEC games or ACC games, and Sun Belt is, there's a lot of Sun Belt teams we should be playing in there as well.
We're only playing one FCS school a year. I mean,
I'm okay with that. I'm just saying, my point is that we can schedule down easily. What I'm saying is those games are easy to schedule. What I'm talking about is let's look at the, and maybe it's time to reach out again to Virginia Tech. You won't hear when all that mess went down. Try. There's a lot of schools that we're not focusing on for some reason. But anyway.
Yeah, and I thought we had a great one. I thought we had a great one coming to Greenville and Boise, who I want to say Boise's preseason ranked like number 18 or 19 this year.
Hey,
I mean, that would have been a good team to bring into Dowdy Ficklin.
Yeah.
And here's
two things. Number one, that's how we fund our athletic department for the most part, is the schedule that we have for the home games. Number one. Number two, we need for everybody in the Ward Sports Medicine building to realize that all the way back in the 1990s, we are a national brand. We are a national brand. We need to act like we're a national brand. And Boise State, you can tell me all you want to about recruiting. Don't you know that when kids are when they see us on, like Kyle mentioned last year, BYU, we get the big win, BYU.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Thank you. Sorry. 2 years ago, we get that big win with BYU. And we're on national television on a Friday night. On a Friday night. That was like the old Thursday night games we had back in the 90s. We had Dave Hart. They used to schedule those big games. And yes, I know we were independent, but still, we need to do a better job marketing ourselves. But I know I could go on all night about that. But we can do better. And if we're not growing, we're dying. So we need to take ourselves on. I've taken myself on. Semenza does. Kyle does at work. That's the only way you get better, is you got to look in the mirror. And we've got to look in the mirror by scheduling. And we got to do it. We're doing a great job with Pirates Unite. But we've got to keep doing that kind of same kind of fundraising somehow, some way, to get those scholarships up from 85 to 105. That's going to be tough, but we'll get it done. Do you guys have anything before we go?
So looking forward to practice starting this week, and football's basically here.
Wednesday, guys. Matt, you have anything? You're going to fly down on Wednesday to be a part of practice? I guess not. I guess we lost Matt. But anyway, all right. Appreciate everybody so much for being a part of it. Matt, you got anything?
Sorry about that. I was on mute. Just like I said, looking forward to the start of the season. I think there's a lot to be excited about this year, and hopefully we can have a good fall camp. Stay healthy. You know, that's a big thing. Stay healthy through fall camp, and let's go.
All right, let's get it done. Everybody, thank you so much for TSO Sunday. We're doing it every Sunday night. And of course, football, like they said, starts on Wednesday. And any kind of breaking news, we'll have it at once on our social media. Have a great weekend. Have a great week. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, what little bit we have left. And as always, go Pirates.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.